LinkedIn News.
Hey there, it's Dan Roth. Welcome to This Is Working, the podcast. I'm here solo this week, and I'm going to share an extended cut of one of my favorite recent interviews with you. Socializing and alcohol often go hand in hand for adults. If you're out for a nice dinner or doing a team event after work, my guess is that alcohol is going to play a part in your experience. Until recently, if you wanted the booze-free beverage and you still wanted to feel like you were part of things, your options were limited to soda or seltzer or juice. But in the last decade, that started to change. Millennials and Gen Zers are drinking less than older generations, and they're fueling a whole new beverage industry, non-alcoholic spirits and beers. Today, if you want to keep your night alcohol-free, you have a range of options. Non-alcoholic beer in particular is finally having its moment. Sales at restaurants and bars jumped 13% last year, while the overall market grew by 3%. There's one man you can thank for your buzz-free evening, and that's Bill Schufelt. He's the co-founder of Athletic Brewing and my guest on today's episode. Athletic is currently the country's king of non-alcoholic beers. As the Wall Street Journal recently pointed out, it's passed Heineken and Budweiser as the number one brand by sales. The road to brand superstardom wasn't an easy one by any measure, but Bill was driven by a vision and a mission. Today, he'll share why he's so passionate about non-alcoholic beer. He'll talk about how he made his way in a highly regulated industry by building a movement and not simply a product. And he'll share his favorite advice for succeeding in difficult markets. We'll get into all of it after this.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by Alumni Ventures. Invest with confidence. Discover the power of venture investing with Alumni Ventures, America's largest venture firm for individual investors. Learn more at av.vc.
Here's Bill Schufelt, founder of Athletic Brewing.
I stopped drinking about 10 years ago for like personal health and lifestyle reasons. Like I was just a busy, healthy, modern adult, and alcohol was kind of a ceiling on a lot of points in my life. But when I stopped drinking, I was in all those places where alcohol was the only adult beverage that was at all premium in there. And it was such a pain point that I started to look at it. But in parallel to that, I saw this huge positive impact it had on my life. And I started to look around and realize, wow, 99% of people are not drinking. Most of the time they're awake. And there was a big opportunity there to give people premium options across all sorts of occasions.
At the time, you were at a hedge fund.
Yep.
You were, I assume, making pretty good money. I mean, this was the idea of leaving to go start something. Was it obvious to you to do it, or was that a challenge to make that jump?
I never, ever would have thought about starting my own business, honestly, unless it was like a hedge fund or investing privately on my own. And yeah, very good economic career. I didn't have a lot of ideas, and I chose one. I've had one idea ever, and I just couldn't turn that idea off.
I've heard somewhere you worked on a business model for like 2 years and your wife sort of pressed you into it. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so my wife was very involved in like two key pivotal moments. And of course, she's been a great in-house advisor all along the journey. So I had stopped drinking about a year and a half prior. And I was just complaining constantly about the lack of premium options. And we'd have like a really nice dinner together. And then I'd have to pair it with a sugary drink that totally ruined the meal. And so enough complaining about this. And one time we were walking to dinner and I was like, someone should just fix this and like make great craft non-alcoholic beer. And she like hit me so hard in the shoulder and saying, you should do that. And it was very rare. We'd known each other 15 years at this point, and she very rarely told me I had any good ideas. And so that really stuck out to me and was alarming. And we dove into it full speed as like a really fun research project, because like this was the first time we'd ever had a mutual idea that we were so excited about. And it was really fun to research. But I will admit, I wasn't close at all to leaving my job, because I had a really good economic opportunity in my current job. And this was a potentially good economic opportunity, but like very risky, probably like 10% probability of success. It wasn't until she connected the dots. So like 2 years in, we're sitting down having tacos at dinner, and she was like, I went through all your materials. She was getting her Columbia MBA at the time, so like a very informed advisor on this topic. And she said, I think this is just a tremendous opportunity, and your passion is so real. I don't want to know you in 10 years if you haven't done this, and we're just talking about it till we're old and gray. She was like, we can afford to take the risk, and let's just do the risk. And she really did a good job of like connecting the dots on like the positive impact stopping drinking had had on my life and some of the friends who had also like taken lead by example. And all of a sudden it was that impact I could have on the world, where in my current career, I had no chance of having a positive impact on anyone. The potential impact on tens of millions of people and like offering moderation off ramps to people in society, it was just this fire that I couldn't possibly turn out. And so I basically didn't sleep for 2 days and walked into my job and quit on the second day of the year.
A lot of advice that comes through this show is start as a side hustle, build something up on the side, make sure that you actually want to do this before you actually go and do it. Make sure it's actually a viable business. You were like, I'm burning the boats. I am just going all in. Did you have any concerns about that?
I think it was somewhat delusional in that, like, I have always been a good saver. So like I had like call it a year and a half of budgetary runway at least. But yeah, I knew if it was half measures, I wasn't fully committed to it. I've seen this so many times where people aren't fully committed to their idea and it's easy to put it aside at that point, like exactly that burn the boats mentality. And I was just so gung-ho and passionate about it at that point too, where it was almost just total delusional optimism. And the next 9 months would have an unbelievable amount of waves of bad news and deep valleys. And somehow it like never hit me really. I was just so delusionally passionate about it.
Did you have any concerns that this was a business that major, massive, multinational companies had decided not to go all in on? I mean, there are people who, this is all they do for a living is make beer around the world. And for them, this was not a market to go into. What did that tell you?
So I think we had a first principles problem where it was product quality. Like people were using production methods that weren't necessarily making quality to the standards people would expect for those price points and those occasions. But also there was a big marketing problem. And for established companies, people in companies, there's not a huge incentive to take risk on things that have uncertain outcomes. And people want defined markets to invest in and work towards. And this was very much undefined and uncertain. But I'll tell you what wasn't uncertain was like my knowledge and my gut that this is an enormous unmet need. And anyone I talked to out there echoed that back to me. I heard it over and over again. Then I actually started to do consumer insights and survey work. And the evidence was so overwhelming that there is a big percentage of people looking for better options. So, but in terms of like good cautious advice I ever got was that it is really hard to go against big incumbents in well-established regulatory industries where there's an incredible amount of friction. And so that's kind of what I had to solve for in a big way. One of my things in business planning was it can't just be a product. It can't be one SKU on the shelf without meaning. It's got to be a full movement. And so to not be a product and be a movement, it's got to have depth in everything we're doing and have an incredibly passionate group of people delivering on every element of the company. And so our investment wasn't just in getting an MVP and getting it out the door. I found an incredibly talented brewer in John Walker, who's our co-founder. He had won every award under the sun in the alcohol side of brewing. And we homebrewed on Gatorade jugs in an empty warehouse for 8 months to get. So we went super deep on product innovation and investment in new product. Branding and marketing we went very deep on and were really intentional about. But then also things like employee handbook, culture, mission statement, charitable and sustainability. We have one of the biggest environmental sustainability grants in the country, even as a really small company, our Two for the Trails program.
You were building all of this with John before you had employees or a real company?
Even in the business plan, before me and John even met, we wanted to have the depth of all these things planned out in a foundation ready to go. And The nice thing is about homebrewing in an empty warehouse with someone you barely know for 9 months, we had a lot of time to talk about what's important in the company, what do we want the mission to be, what do we want the culture to be, what do we want the handbook to be. And I still walk through the employee handbook with every single person who starts in our company and like really emphasize like how that's important to us.
But what does that mean you walk them through it? You sit down and you're like, you crack the book open together and you go page by page through it?
Exactly, yeah. So we have like the nuts and bolts regulatory like legal handbook, but then we have this like 20 page like values handbook that's like, this is what's important to the company. And it all headlines with our mission statement. But from there, it really adds depth. And I think getting people really excited about the North Star and the culture and the team environment we're building allows us to really decentralize power to everyone and like empower them in a way.
How do you find a co-founder? What goes into that?
That was probably the deepest valley super early on. I'd gone from one of the world's biggest hedge funds, like an enormous commission payer on Wall Street, and I had probably 200 or 300 brokers that would pick up on the first ring anytime I called. And so I was so spoiled and lucky to have this amazing network that was super responsive. And the second I stepped out of that building, I realized that a lot of phone calls and emails just go unanswered, unheard. I would go to brewing conferences and really put myself out there and try to talk to, there'd be like tens of thousands of brewers, and I'd try to have hundreds of conversations a day that really would go nowhere. There'd be no interest in what we're working on. And I'd get back to the hotel room and like flop on the bed exhausted and call my wife and be like, I got absolutely nowhere today. And I probably did hundreds of conversations before finding John. I actually had to take the word non-alcoholic beer out of everything, all the job posts and stuff, because we just like weren't getting applicants or people excited about it. I really didn't want to go that slow. I didn't even necessarily know I was looking for a co-founder.
I was going to say, did you know? Yeah, you weren't sure you needed a co-founder. You were just looking for someone with industry experience at that point?
Yeah. I set out looking for a brewer. Mm-hmm. And because it took so long and I talked to so many people, that when I found John, I knew it was just an amazing individual, co-founder. And his talent has really been like being so patient in that decision. I think it's been one of the biggest things about our business, in that he complements everything I do. I try to complement everything he does, and we've really been able to build the business together.
Incredible. And how did you get him to a yes, I want to join you?
I mean, at that point, if anyone was receptive at all in the first 6 months of like even talking about Athletic, I would pretend to be in their city. I'd be like, oh, I'm in LA next week for meetings. And I'd like literally fly across the country to talk to someone about it. So I basically started the conversation with John, please don't hang up. Like, if you give me 5 minutes, I think I can convey passion and excitement for this idea. And he was like, okay, you got it. And I was like, and also please don't say no till Monday. Like, think about it over the weekend and at least give me a few days to say no. And credit to him, he was one of the only people who didn't say no, just like immediately. And he thought about it over the weekend and came back. And we have these long email exchanges early on. He was like, immediately I was going to say no, but then I thought about it. I talked about it with my family, .. I think this is genius and I'm so excited about it. And there's so much innovation and challenges and the world needs this. And like, he just starts going in his email. And it was basically like, when can I come and meet in person? And I didn't want to like lose that momentum. And so the first time he was ready, which I think was like the following Wednesday, I flew to Santa Fe where he was with his young family. He had a 1 and a 5-year-old. And we met once in person and he picked up and moved his family across the country to Connecticut. And we started homebrewing in an empty warehouse together. He had grown up in Connecticut and hadn't lived there for 17 years. So it wasn't that tough a move back, but it was as big a leap on his part as mine, for sure.
And that's a lot of responsibility, I assume, on your shoulders too. You've just gotten this guy to buy into your vision, move his family and be part of this. I mean, did that change your math at all on what you were building or your concern about how much this had to work?
Well, he had said, we're never going live with this, selling a single can unless it's world-class beer with or without alcohol. He's like, this non-alcoholic beer has to stand up to full-strength beer in every way. So he had incredibly high standards. I had already started raising investor money at that point too. So I had a responsibility to John, I had a responsibility to my family, had a responsibility to our investors. And like, I take that investor capital responsibility super seriously. And we're just committed. We did hundreds of trials to get to a good tasting non-alcoholic beer. And even as bad or unsuccessful as all those were, like I had this delusional optimism and I don't think I ever doubted that we were gonna solve this. And so we were just kind of like off and already working on the next things too. It was like, what do ingredient contracts look like? What do we want the optimal brew house to be like? Our construction quotes, our architects, our OSHA manuals, our food safety. There's just so much to do in small business. And it was great. We had this long lead time to like make sure everything was set up before we launched, which I think all that foundation work and putting a lot of thought into it really helped us launch at a faster scale once we were alive.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bill Schufeld builds a movement without a budget.
Hey, I'm Michael Kovnat, host of The Next Big Idea Daily. The show is a masterclass in better living from some of the smartest writers around. Every morning, Monday through Friday, we'll serve up a quick 10-minute lesson on how to strengthen your relationships, supercharge your creativity, boost your productivity, and more. Follow The Next Big Idea Daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. While getting Athletic Brewing off the ground, Bill and his team had to do more than just build a product. They had to build an entire market. They needed to build buzz around a product that to consumers and store owners hadn't evolved in decades.
I knew if I could convey why I'm so excited about this and shared a little bit of that fire, that I could make an army of 1,000 true fans, and like they would then tell thousands of people and it would build on itself. But I had to get people to the moment I was at. And when I stopped drinking, all of a sudden I was sleeping 8 hours through the night. I was much less stressed. I was getting great workouts, never missing a workout, usually eating healthy, much more mindful. I was much more productive at work. And it was almost this like virtuous circle in my life where I used to work out to stay fit or healthy. And for the first time I was like working out and loving it. And like, I felt like I wanted to accelerate the whole workout. And like the positive impact it had on my life, I was hoping to see that in the world and in our consumer base. And so I got out there and just started talking to people. That first summer on the market, I signed up to sponsor 70 athletic events. Most of it was just emailing race directors, asking if I could show up for free with a cooler and hand out hundreds of beers at the finish line of their race. And it was anything from local 5Ks where, you know, 500 people finish in a 20-minute window to half marathons, ultra marathons, triathlons, Ironmans. And I know our name is Athletic, but I wasn't really going for the athletic relation there. I was going for just where are people happy, sweaty, thirsty, and receptive to me putting a beer in their hand. And just that 1 or 2 minute interaction where I could put a beer in someone's hand, talk to them about like why we are just making non-alcoholic beer great and tasty. And people would go away with a beer and we would get hundreds of emails back in. You know, sometimes it took months, sometimes it was almost immediate. And people would say, I had no intention of stopping drinking. I'm a total accidental quitter, but I've noticed all these changes in my life. Or, you know, I love beer. I'm not giving up my Friday night beer, but all of a sudden I can drink beer 7 nights a week and feel great about it. I have like the perfect IPA to go with my Taco Tuesday now, or like so many iterations of those, or lapsed drinkers, or people with health issues, or people who are pregnant, and like getting to re-participate in those social occasions. Like, I can't tell you how many people were like, I've been trying to stop drinking for decades and finally this worked. Those customer testimonials and like just the wave, it's a pretty high bar to feel. You have to reach out to a company and express an emotion. Right. And so that's when I knew that we had a real groundswell of people who really got what we were doing.
And did that 1,000 sort of true fans, was that a number that you had on a whiteboard somewhere and you said, we have to get to this number?
It's a Kevin Kelly concept that I had brushed up against somewhere. And I was like, that's a great idea. I'm a huge reader, you know, between podcasts and reading and everything. Like, history's smartest people have written down their words over and over again. I try to digest as much as they can because everything we're going through rhymes with that. And so concepts like that, I try to internalize and build on.
One of the things you also did to enable the business to really go quickly was you got into Whole Foods.
Yep.
Can you talk about how that happened?
Whole Foods is an enormous grocery store, and it's amazing that they're still that in tune with their local roots. I just walked into a local Whole Foods, and the forager, I had a brown bottle, no branding whatsoever, and she tasted it, and she was like, oh my. She's like, we've seen no innovation in this
part. Let me back up for 1 second. You just walk in, you got some liquid in the brown bottle, and you find someone whose title is the forager, and you just hand her the bottle, and she takes it?
Yep.
You didn't know, you never met her. There was no cold, there was no warm intro. This is a pure cold call on her.
And it happened to be her last day also.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, oh man, what bad timing. Like, I'm getting this person on their last day. And she was like, this is incredible. And she immediately was like, you've got to get to the regional office. And she made this connection to regional and I got to go into the office next week. And they basically said, we've been waiting for this. And they gave us a chance in Connecticut. And then as soon as we opened new states of distribution, Whole Foods took us really far and really fast. And Whole Foods has been leading the charge in terms of like development of the category also. It's over 10% of all beer in Whole Foods is non-alcoholic beer now. And Athletic is the number one beer in Whole Foods nationally, so bigger than all the big beers, which they've said publicly. So I'm not spilling any inside secrets there. But that gives me a lot of hope that this 0.3% of beer market when we entered is well over 10% in one of the leading grocery stores on the cutting edge. Really gives me hope that we're talking about a trend that's going to take that kind of reception nationally in the future.
But I want to go back to this idea of one person helping you get into one of the most important distribution centers that you can get into. Is there any lesson from that? Or is that like a lightning strike moment for you as an entrepreneur?
So in general, and this is a concept I've grabbed from both like Marc Andreessen and Sahil Bloom, is kind of increasing your luck surface area. And I think Marc Andreessen said, luck's not going to knock on the door while you're watching Netflix and come in and present you a menu of options. It's when you get out in the world and put yourself at risk and talk to people. And so I've always been someone who says yes to a lot of things, someone who's out there on the road, talking to people in person, and trying to increase that luck surface area. You know, a lot of people sit in an office and try to scale an idea these days. And there are a lot of softwares and tools that can help scale ideas and stuff. However, those tools and softwares are available to everyone. So like the moat behind you is not that deep. I'm a huge believer of getting out there in the world, talking to your community face-to-face, creating natural connection, just like sampling at race finish lines, which I still do. And like doing things that don't scale, but all the time. And eventually, if you look back and you're like, wow, I did these things that don't scale 1,000 times, all of a sudden, like 1,000 is a huge number, you know, so.
So we talked a lot about how you started the company in the early days, but at this point, you're now a mid-sized, fast-growing company. Is it important to you that your employees embody some of these same ideas that you had in the early days? What kind of culture are you trying to create around this luck surface or around making a movement?
Yeah, trying to encourage a lot of the principles and effort and passion that we've always had. We do have an ownership mentality in our company. Everyone is an owner from day one. We have equity ownership for everyone, full benefits, things like that to like increase job security. But yeah, we start and end every presentation internally with our mission statement. So like there is a just constant ringing of our North Star. But really trying to like incentivize and encourage like what we preach. And that's like hard work, taking risks, taking innovation, not blaming people or like looking for blame when things fail. Like risks and tests are really encouraged. But yeah, I think it's kind of the old mantra of like hiring slow and like who you get on the team is super important, and then empowering them. You know, as you look at LinkedIn these days, like a lot of people jump from job to job to job to job really fast. And Athletic wants to be one of those places where people work for 10 plus years. And like are super proud of what they've worked on over that time, that it's financially rewarding, but also like fulfilling for other reasons. And I have come from a financially rewarding but not fulfilling job, and it was a pretty empty, very tough existence that, you know, I would have pressed fast forward for a number of years if I had the chance at sometimes, which is like a sad mentality. And work is about 1/3 of our waking life, but it can be 50%+ of your waking thoughts. And we want that to be something people are so excited about and fulfilled by and feel good about. And so trying to keep those open communication channels so we know when we're off the mark there too.
Love that idea about 50% of your thoughts. That's really true. It's really incredible. No matter how many hours we put into work, when you're off work, you're still thinking about work.
For sure, yeah.
I love to ask about career advice. What do you tell people when they say, I've got something I'm passionate about, I want to go start my own business?
So on one hand, I say starting a business is the best education you could possibly have. It's like a multidisciplinary, nearly impossible challenge every day, and you learn and grow so much. And it is what you make out of it entirely. That being said, it is really hard. And like each foot of progress is harder than you could possibly imagine. And so my main advice is making sure you're passionate about it to go through the tough times and the valleys. And like valleys come almost every day. But like if you're really, truly passionate about something or like meeting a need for consumers that's authentic, those valleys will, you'll run right through. Hmm. Yeah, for years I was doing the accounting on Friday nights, like not being able to like socialize or watch Netflix or something. And I missed a lot of life in those early years just working on the business. And I'm so glad I had the passion and the support in my household.
What kind of advice do you give for that person who maybe is looking to spend 10 years at your company? What's your advice to them when they're starting?
I would encourage only to go into that if you have that passion. There is something great about just collecting a salary and the consistency and the stability. I think it's making sure you love what you do and you're fulfilled by what you do and you like the people you're working with and being picky about that. Because as we talked about, it is 50%+ of your emotional energy and thinking goes into your career. So making sure you get with the right team and something you're really excited to tell people you're working on.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. And thanks for the beer, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
That was Bill Schufelt, the co-founder of Athletic Brewing. Whether you're an entrepreneur or not, there's a lot that people can learn from this conversation with Bill. First of all, Bill talks about the importance of getting John Walker not just on the team, but as a co-founder. He really needed them to buy into this, and they complement each other. Second, he talks about this idea of centering your work around values that matter to your mission. He drills Athletic Brewing's North Star and values into employees again and again and insists that everyone live by those values. Finally, Bill teaches us that some non-scalable actions can still have outsized impact and are worth considering if you can commit to always doing them. The best example of that is Bill showing up at all of these races, passing out his non-alcoholic beer to everyone who crosses that finish line. So what's a non-scalable action that's had a big impact on your bottom line? Let me know on LinkedIn using the hashtag ThisIsWorking. You might hear your contributions on an upcoming episode. Do you know someone who has that one great idea but just can't launch it? Bill was in that position, and then he launched Athletic Brewing. Share this episode with them. Maybe it will get them inspired. And be sure to review the episode as well. Rating our show wherever you listen helps us reach more leaders. This Is Working is a LinkedIn editorial production. Our production team includes Sarah Storm, Stephen Valdivia, Nina Melendez, Asaf Gidron, Taisha Henry, and Andres Cordona. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Dave Pond is head of news production. Our head of original programming is Courtney Koop. I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Be well and stay curious.